I hope you like 80s references, because this movie has one every 1.21 seconds. See, it even has me doing it. Let's get really self-reflective with Ready Player One, which was the number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Movie in America.
Movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
It's the number one movie in America. I'm here with a, what did we talk about? Oh, I'm here with a 90s shock jock DJ team of movie analysts.
Gibbs on Robin.
Obviously, Robin Hitchcock, not the other one.
Quivers.
I almost said Givens. See, now I'm getting them confused. Hi, Robin.
Hi.
And Camila Adams is here. Hey.
Hello. And it's very appropriate that we're Shock Jock Radios, considering our new digs.
We're today in a radio station, guys, with thanks to River's Edge, who was our home for the first 6 months of this podcast. We have moved to the iHeartMedia Studios.
Yay.
And a beautiful, this is actually their podcast studio.
And it's really nice.
It's really, really nice.
It is. It's so shiny.
If you're in Pittsburgh, iHeart is the parent company of, well, they're the parent company of hundreds of radio stations all over the country. Here, WDVE, The X, KISS, many, many others. There's the country one. Big 104.7.
Oh.
Is that what that is?
Yes. Sure. It's a pop country station.
If you say so.
Many 3WS for when you want to hear Fleetwood Mac.
Which is a lot for me.
Right.
Don't tell me about your woman.
And they've upgraded the whole building, including building a podcast studio, and they were kind enough to let us come in and start doing this here. And by the way, I should tell you, you can listen to Number One Movie in America on the iHeartRadio app, which is like all the things that all of your music apps do, because you can call up stuff on it, you can have it shuffle through, like starting from an artist, like that other one that rhymes with Shmandora. And you can also listen to whatever your preferred home radio station is. So wherever you are, the thing you grew up with is probably an iHeart station, and you can listen to it.
This was a big deal for me when I lived abroad.
Oh, yeah, you were using that to connect with American radio?
Correct. It was great.
Nice. And they have podcasts, including whatever podcast you like, you can pull through there, and exclusive ones, including this show. So thanks to iHeartMedia.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you for
having us. And it used to be a Howard Stern company.
Oh, wow.
Howard Stern was syndicated on the X for most of the late 90s and early 2000s. That's the
tie. And that is what our listeners care about. I'm just excited to finally be inside of the building that I have stared at while stuck in traffic over the years.
If you don't know, it's a giant gleaming cube.
Gleaming the cube.
I call it a flash cube.
That's fair.
That dates me.
And much of it is not the radio. The radio stuff takes up two floors, but like just where it's situated on the hill, it's just a giant, shiny cube in the middle of the highway.
And it'll if you catch like the sunset or sunrise, if you pass by it just right,
it can get you.
Yeah, you're jacked.
So we're a movie podcast.
Yeah, that's right.
Not a bragging about our podcast recording studio podcast.
Movies and radio are the same thing, right? We're here to talk about, this is our second most recent film. After Incredibles 2, it's the second time we're having a DVD you can still easily buy at Target.
Right.
And the first Spielberg, and I was excited because I love it, and everyone else kind of went,
I mean,
before we get to the numbers, your general feelings?
I'm okay with it.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Not getting too deep.
I'm annoyed with how okay I am with it.
You want to be angry, but you're not?
I'm still angry. I'm always angry. That's my secret cap. But I cannot help but like this movie also.
Okay.
Yeah, it's...
I know last time you said you had a lot of thoughts
I have a lot of thoughts. Okay. And I did go back and read my old Twitter thread, and
good.
It was fire.
Yeah, right, I'm great. Sure.
I transcribed some of it to share with
Excellent.
You.
But I'm glad... No, when I went back and read my old review, and it ended with, like, it's going to be hard for you to not like this at various points. And that's it.
That's really what it is. It's a very likable movie.
Right. Right. Let's do the information.
What about the recap? Don't we do that?
Oh,
now?
The 60-second. You know, it's only our 17th time.
Come on, get with the program, Sean.
This week on the 60-second recap, which I don't have to ask Robin to time anymore because there's just a big counting number thing right in
Look
front
at
of
that.
Me.
Ooh.
I mean, if you want to still run a watch every episode.
Because otherwise you're going to have to do math.
Well, it'll just be a minute from when you...
That's also how I do it.
It's not calculated.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Camila is up for the 60-second recap this week. Can Camila, still the record holder for shortest ever recap, handle all of this exposition in 60 seconds? Let's find out. Go.
In a world where virtual reality gaming is taking over everyone's lives, a young boy who is just trying to win the Looney Dead game developer's secret challenge ends up having to save the girl of his dreams, his new best friends, and the entire virtual society of Oasis.
And that may have been a new record. When this comes out, Robin, get the stopwatches, because that was 15 or 16 seconds.
It's difficult. There's so much going on in this movie, and I also kind of sat with it, like, how would I describe it to somebody?
It's either...
that's pretty much it.
You're either going to be there for 5 minutes, or you're going to say, this is a post-apocalyptic kind of, there's a game, it's a virtual world, we have fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, everyone's into the 80s, a lot.
Right, yeah. I have so many questions about that.
It's a choice.
I mean, I'm not mad at it.
Yeah.
It just makes me question, like, who was the target audience?
Well, that was part of the problem with the box office. Let's go to the numbers. Ready Player One was released March 29th of 2019, the sixth number one of the year. 2018, that's correct. It won the weekend with $41.7 million, easily taking the weekend. The number two was another new release. Tyler Perry's Acrimony.
Ugh.
Did manage number two with $17.1 million. The only other new release was God's Not Dead 2, A Light in the Darkness, which thankfully only managed 12th and $2.6 million. It was a one-week number one. It fell in its second weekend to A Quiet Place, which was one of those surprise box office. If A Quiet Place had made $8 million its first weekend, no one would have blinked. Like, yeah, it's a horror movie. It's okay. Instead, A Quiet Place made $50.2 million in its opening weekend.
People wanted to be very aware of their chewing.
We might land on that. We might land on that this episode.
Right.
In fact, we'll tell you later, this today has the best ever odds that we'll land on that.
That's true.
Or any one of several
Stay
other
tuned.
Movies. Ready Player One did manage to hold on to second in its sophomore weekend, fending off a challenge from the debuting Blockers, which was a delightful movie.
That was a very charming movie.
Was it?
Yeah.
Yeah. I saw it twice.
Really?
John Cena, comedic genius.
He was great. A lot of, you know.
He is surprisingly good.
Yeah.
If there's an above average comedy, I end up seeing it twice because usually Mary Beth can't come to the screening, and I know she'll like it, so I go again.
Gotcha.
But that was one I was happy to see a second time because it's genuinely funny and like, and not in a, you know, there's nothing problematic about that movie.
Well.
Directed by a woman, Kay Cannon.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Blockers opened in third with $20.5 million. Ready Player One held on okay. It stayed afloat for about 6 weeks. It ended up with $137 million domestic, which was less than its production budget, which was over $175. It was a big enough hit overseas that it made a profit, but only just. This was a hit. It was fine. It was not what they thought they were going to get out of it. And it ended up only the 24th highest grossing film of the year behind Ocean's 8 and The Meg.
The
Meg made
the
more
Meg
movie.
Made more money.
The Meg made more movie money than this giant Spielberg production.
Wow, that's Yikes. Embarrassing.
Right. I tried to watch that
that's
once
more
and
embarrassing.
I was just like, no. I turned it off like maybe 15 minutes in.
Yeah, that's more embarrassing than this movie is, and this movie is embarrassing.
It has some cringy, and we'll get to it. Because this is our first Spielberg, let's talk about it for a little bit.
I was surprised. It was at the end, it was like, directed by Spielberg. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
Right, it's like, wouldn't you think they'd send in a hack?
There's like a bunch of guys. Get one of those guys that had one moderate action sci-fi hit and then was treated like great. Like that Cloverfield guy.
J.J. Abrams?
Wait, was that J.J. Abrams?
Yes.
I'm thinking of Matt Reeves. Who's Matt Reeves?
Oh, maybe that is right. Okay, he just produced that.
I'm going to figure out who Matt Reeves is later in the podcast.
I think
that's the Cloverfield
guy. Also, How about Colin Trevorrow?
Oh yeah, he could have done this.
He'd be the classic choice.
He is the, yeah, Spielberg doesn't want to. That is his role in life. but Spielberg really did want to direct Ready Player One, and it became his 13th highest grossing film. Number one is E.T., then Jurassic Park. Unfortunately, Kingdom of the Crystal Skull is third. Then Jaws and Raiders of the Lost Ark. If you go to the adjusting for inflation chart.
Yes, which, Matt Reeves directed Cloverfield.
Hey, okay. Look at that.
Good job.
We don't talk about the adjusting for inflation chart much because it just kind of renders obsolete everything we're talking about.
That's correct.
But for the sake of argument, if you look at that chart of the top movies of all time, adjusted for inflation, E.T. is fourth overall.
Oh, wow.
If in today's dollars, E.T. made $1.27 billion domestically.
Oh, my gosh.
Whoa.
And Jaws made $1.15. Jaws is seventh or eighth on that chart.
Okay, wow.
So if in real dollars, it's E.T., then Jaws, then Jurassic Park, then Raiders of the Lost Ark, then Close Encounters of the Third Kind. The only movies that definitely more people saw in a movie theater than E.T. are Gone with the Wind, Star Wars, and The Sound of Music. So,
Gone with the Wind?
Why did so many people... That's like the number one champ, right?
That's the top grossing movie of all time. Gone with the Wind was like... Everyone in America saw it three times over the course of 3 years.
And then also every 10 years they released it again.
Oh.
And one-tenth of everyone
in America saw it
again.
Is that what we're counting? We're also counting the re-releases? Yes.
That definitely counts too, but it's probably true that Gone with the Wind sold more tickets than anything ever has.
Every human who was able to buy a movie ticket
bought it. It was also this like, hey, look at these new things called talkies.
Exactly.
So 1939.
And like, to be clear, not a lot of competition. I mean, this is an era where, like, you know, 20 A movies and 30 B movies would come out per year.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
Like, you had the real estate. But if it sold the same amount of tickets today, Gone with the Wind would make over $1.8 billion domestic. So $1 billion more than Endgame.
My God.
But E.T.
And I still have never seen it.
Very popular.
I'm fine.
I don't think you need to watch it.
I'm okay.
Twice a year, I'm like, Gone with the Wind is playing at Blank Theater. Mm. I should go. I'm never going to watch it all at home.
Right.
I did go see it in the theater for exactly this reason.
And how was your night?
Listen, there's a lot to like about that movie. I saw it with my sister, which was kind of nice. And there's an intermission, so we got to, you know, have an intermission in the theater.
Stretch your legs.
We literally went and bought some popcorn during the intermission.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, there's a lot to like in that movie, and then a lot that's really bad and long and boring and dated.
What about that Scorsese movie that's coming out? Anyway.
Oh, definitely going to be seeing that one at home.
Maybe. Robin, you and I were the only two people in a critic screening of Roma last year.
And we ruined it for each other.
Yeah. I mean, maybe that movie's better when you're not making fun of it to the only other person in earshot.
Yeah.
But maybe that'll happen again for the Scorsese thing.
I would go. You know that I would go.
I know you would go. And I kind of hope it doesn't, because then I'll have to sit there the whole time. I won't be able to pause it.
Yeah.
This is not relevant to Ready Player One, I don't think. This is just a fun fact. This is only barely in the top 10 Simon Pegg movies.
Because he's in the Star Trek movies?
They say that his number one movie is The Force Awakens, even though he was in that
for a minute.
But even if you put that in, Ready Player One is behind 3 Star Treks, 3 Mission Impossibles, and an Ice Age.
Oh, okay.
Simon Pegg's.
I stand by that.
Yeah.
You know what?
Shaun of the Dead.
Shaun of the Dead made like $20
million.
Yeah,
I know, but that's my jam, man.
Oh, yeah.
I love that. That's probably my most favorite Simon Pegg performance, I think.
Mm. I mean, he was good in this.
Yeah, no, he was good.
His American accent is demented.
It's very confusing.
What Americans sound like.
It took me a minute to, like, I saw him in the flashbacks, and I just kept questioning, like, why would we waste Simon Pegg for just flashbacks? I'm sure he's going to show up again.
Well,
did you recognize
his voice as the curator?
I did not.
Okay. I did it when I first saw it.
Yeah. I definitely did. Mm-hmm. And then that sort of also helped me guess some plot points, you know what I mean?
Gotcha.
I also just think, why not make his character British? There's no super important reason.
Because this is book. No, because this is, you know, an American... I mean, it's said in the thing, these two guys started this company in a garage in Columbus.
Yeah.
Like Apple, like whoever.
There are British people in Columbus, Ohio.
So we came to the Americas for college.
Hey.
End of story.
This is after the bandwidth wars and the corn syrup riots. We don't know where people are anymore. And finally, and this gets to your point, why didn't this do better? In its opening weekend, according to Box Office Mojo, 59% of the audience was male and 56% of the audience was over 25. For you're going to make a lot of money, those are real bad numbers.
Okay.
Like, you want it to be 50-50, if not a slight lean towards women.
Mm-hmm.
And you want a significant portion of the audience to be younger.
Right.
This seems to have appealed really directly to middle-aged white guys who got all the references.
Bingo. Mm-hmm. Yes. And this is why I was kind of confused. And I don't know when the book came out.
Early 10s, like in maybe 2011, 2012.
So I remember, kind of remember seeing the trailers for this movie when it first came out, and just nothing made sense. Like, nothing seemed good to me. Like, I was like, that's really not for me. And like, because, you know, you've got this young kid in the beginning of it. I like video games. I do play video games, but still, there was nothing that just drew me in from the trailers. And so, and then after watching it and seeing all, like, nothing but 80s references, mm-hmm. and I'm just like, who is this for? And that's exactly it. Like, you know, middle-aged white guys.
The biggest problem, and I like the movie a lot, and I like the book a lot. Obviously, the biggest problem is, boy, is this, like, the nerd fantasy to end all nerd fantasies. Like, congratulations, because you're obsessed with old video games right. and dorky movies, you get to save the world, and there's a girl there.
Right.
Like, it you couldn't draw it up more cleanly.
And not just any girl, a girl with a flaw.
She's got a birthmark on her face.
And just so that it can become like a little bit of an emblem. Like,
right.
She has a birthmark that might as well be carnival face paint.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, you're a member of KISS. Like, I
yes.
But she's got to hide her face. You mm-hmm. wouldn't like me if you saw me in real life.
It's like, just get the fuck out of here. Just
this gorgeous is like, woman.
This is like the bit. And do you remember She's Out of My League?
Yes.
Where you know, Alice Eve is this goddess character who's like, but I have this terrible flaw. I can't even, you'll believe me when you say, and she has like webbed toes on one foot. It's like, that is the level of like, look at this, like,
right.
like nerd boy's dream girl who's like, part of my face isn't the same color as the other part. Right. Really?
Yes. This kid has been like hiding in a constructed a van, basically. Like, nobody's, as there any human contact really been happening in this land at this point now? And he's just happy to have a touch of the woman. Like, he doesn't, I don't think he's going to really care about
birthmarks. I got really upset when they talk about how she's like, are you prepared? And he's like, yeah, my bodysuit has a crotch inlay. Like, imagine that being your first date talk. It's really upsetting to me in a lot of ways.
Give us your Twitterized take.
Okay, so basically I was annoyed by the existence of this movie because it's like, hey, guys who get everything in media catered to them, we're going to dig down and cater to you even more than ever. And I did find out that part of the reason I was particularly salty about all of this is because A Wrinkle in Time had just come out, which was perfectly catered to my inner child, mm-hmm. and I loved it, and everybody else trashed it, and it did not make a lot of money. And so I specifically said, if the fifth element is love in this movie, I'm going to knock on the door of every person who trashed A Wrinkle in Time and blow an air horn in their face. And then after they got a key.
What's the fifth element is love? What are you?
In the film, The Fifth Element.
Yeah.
Which have you seen?
Probably.
Oh, Sean.
I've seen either Fifth Element or 12 Monkeys, and I know they're not that similar. I just remember them both being on the shelf, and we picked one.
Well, one is very orange, but I remember falling. I've tried to watch Fifth Element so many times, and I fall asleep every time.
I mean, look, that Luc Besson is trash, so don't watch it, but right. I do love that movie, and basically, The Fifth Element, spoilers, is love, okay? And in this movie, one of the Easter eggs is to ask a woman to dance.
Right.
So anyway.
Excuse me, the key. The egg is the goal.
Oh, you're right.
After,
sorry.
Yeah. Sorry.
Oh wow. Easy.
That's a pedantic nerd response.
No, yeah. That's a very good.
Put your nerd away.
I'll allow it. No, this is the right. This is the right time for nerd stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah. So anyway, I very much roll my eyes at this movie gets a pass on all the normal like woo woo. Trust yourself. You can change the world for the better. And A Wrinkle in Time, which is a kids movie,
mm-hmm.
but. Is a kids a women's kids movie?
So yeah, so you were a bit, you were extremely salty about.
I'm so glad that I went back and looked and remembered the specific
right.
Wrinkle in Time thing as being the key to
right.
my anger there.
Not to how do you kill salt? Not to dilute your salt.
Yes,
but I mean I would call the reaction to and fate to these movies pretty similar.
Oh, I agree.
They made almost the same exact same amount of money.
I know. But at the time it was one of those things where A Wrinkle in Time, it's like horrible failure.
Mm-hmm.
Like how Ava DuVernay out at Disney. And then with this, it like no one would ever for a second be like Spielberg's career is over.
You're talking about the narrative around.
Correct.
Yeah.
And the review, and I am looking, and the reviews are much better. Like mm-hmm. Ready
much
Player
for Ready Player.
Ready Player One was at about 72%, and A Wrinkle in Time was below 50.
I liked
Wrinkle in Time,
I
but
too.
I probably liked this more because
it's for you.
Because it's for me.
Right.
It's the cheap trick with the 80s references. Because
yeah.
I with the Shining. The whole Shiny thing. I thought you were like, I didn't think you were being like for real, like literal when you said like in the middle of the movie, just turns to the Shine. I was like, oh, he was literal.
Very, very real.
I will simultaneously praise that and acknowledge how biased I am because first of all, that scene is amazing. It's a technological marvel that, you know, they managed to take this CGI world and layer it absolutely flawlessly into an existing movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And not only that, it's funny. It like plays off of the film in plays off of The Shining in smart ways. It's completely original. None of that is in the book. And yet completely fits with the spirit of Ready Player One and what they're trying to do too. I acknowledging that like you have to find the girl and get her to dance. Like that is a little bit of an odd choice, but I love that sequence so much that it inspired my third purchase of a ticket for Ready Player One.
I think
Yikes.
My favorite part of the whole movie is when the bad guy army
mm-hmm.
is all getting killed at the same time in the Shining
because
level.
They're in the Shining level.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, that this is I can't say this to my Lord of the Rings friends. I wrote down the entire like big battle showdown mm-hmm. is like the thing in Return of the King, but interesting. The thing in
I don't know.
I
have never.
Are you gonna go? Do you really want to go back to Return of the King and watch that hour long battle?
I am questioning that it is interesting here.
Oh, it was so good.
Okay,
Chucky shows up.
Chucky is fine. I have another one of my old tweets
go
that
ahead.
I would like to quote because I'm still salty about it.
All right.
If the trick in this game is to use your knowledge of pop culture, you should be penalized for using the Iron Giant as a gun.
Yeah,
Iron Giant is not a gun.
I don't think it was the Iron Giant in the book.
The Iron Giant also doesn't fit. That's 1999.
Oh, no, there's a lot of fast and loose. Like, you know, the book would get out of the era a tiny bit.
Yeah.
This is broadly out
to
of the era.
To be fair, the Iron Giant is a retro thing. So,
sure.
like... The people who are obsessed with with the 80s, who are really people who are obsessed with the 50s, are also obsessed with Iron Giant.
But it's
Chris Prexta,
right? but the important thing, and why I love that sequence so much, is just because it's like a mini Avengers with mm-hmm. anything. It's like,
yeah.
yep, I'm watching the Iron Giant fight Mechagodzilla while Chucky kills some of the underlings.
Yeah, but to me it would be a Lego Batman movie,
uh-huh.
South Park Imagination Land, this. In decreasing order, because people can't see my hands and our listeners can't see my hands. In decreasing order of fun.
Fun. This was
really. I mean, I am just really holding on to that hate about the
I do like this movie.
I am absolutely willing to discuss this movie's flaws. Lack of fun is not one of them.
Yeah, I guess I'm saying that it is less fun than those other fun things that are doing
Lego Batman's
all the same thing.
Yes.
It's all like, let's play with the multiverse.
Okay.
I also wanted to point out my other favorite thing in the movie is King Kong, which also doesn't
fit. Oh, yeah, yeah.
That when the King Kong thing happened, I was like, okay, this is too cool for me to, I can't sit here with my arms crossed and my brow furrowed anymore.
That's another completely invented for this movie.
Oh wow.
So the thing and I'm also had a pre-existing attachment with the book. The most interesting thing about the book to movie is they're very different. They're both very good with glaring flaws. They're just different glaring flaws. Like they are about equally as problematic, both problematic and like just a little sloppy. Just they traded which things would be sloppy. And the movie had to make the particular challenges to get the keys much more dynamic. The first challenge to get a key in the book is like he goes through a recreation of a Dungeons and Dragons campaign and then has to beat a wizard at a game of Joust, like on an arcade cabinet. Which like yeah, let's do a giant car race instead.
Definitely
that's probably
giant car race.
And the analog to The Shining is the second key is like he has to completely reenact Matthew Broderick's part in the movie War Games from beginning to end.
Fun.
And we're not going to put all of War Games in the middle of this movie, so let's have fun inside The Shining. Those were great movie improvements. And if anything, like the book is a little worse on the save the world, get the girl stuff in that they don't actually meet until the last page of the book.
What?
Like the book ends with like him seeing her and she's sitting there and like she has the birthmark and he doesn't care and they kiss the end.
Okay.
So that's a little bit better here. I do think that like the love plot in the movie version is so abbreviated that you could have just cut it all together.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just, again, like one of those things with so many movies that's just unnecessary love story in it.
It's like they don't know how to make a movie without putting a love story in it.
Yeah, it's like we didn't need this.
Yeah.
And I've got some like kind of logistical questions about...
Please.
because I'm trying to... I was wondering, what is the point of this Oasis game? Like, is this world just like Sims and there's just like all these little side things happening, or is this a game that you are playing and then you've got these extra like Easter egg treasure hunt thing?
So it started as, you know, like World of Warcraft times a million, you know, like this is a giant virtual world that you can play in a bunch of different ways. Uh-huh. And then it evolved as society kind of broke down and got shittier and shittier, more of normal life things just started getting moved into the Oasis. Like it's briefly referred to in the movie, but a big part of the book that everyone just goes to school in the Oasis.
Oh, really?
All education happens on a school planet.
Wow.
And you know, by this point, most relevant commerce and stuff is happening inside the game.
Huh. So this whole thing, like this world and like everything in this movie, like the guy who's trying to like take over the Oasis and cheat his way to find all the keys and all that stuff. This is basically just like the personification of Facebook and social media for me.
Yeah.
It's just like everything starts off fun and we're doing everything great. And then somebody wants to come and control it and fuck it up for everybody else. And now it's terrible and awful and everything's burning. So
people talk a lot about, you know, fans of Ready Player One book and movie talk a lot about, oh, this is a great, you know, take on where our culture is going and exactly what you just said. And it has a lot to say about, and I like it. I'm not convinced that it actually has much more to say than the surface level. Like, watch out for the internet.
Right. Right. And another thing, logistically. So there's the moment where Samantha, the birthmark.
Mm-hmm. Birthmark face.
Yes. Artemis.
Artemis. Mm-hmm. Yes. When she was captured by the other people and she's like hiding out in the bad guy's army suits and the little silver suit and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. She is still her avatar. How is she still her avatar when she's signed in with somebody else's equipment?
Because if she wasn't, you'd have a tough time following the plot. And I think that's the end of it.
I just want to, just once, just have her log into something. Just if I would totally buy it if there was an arm, you just log in as yourself, right. And that would be great.
There's a login.
Right. Yeah.
There's a joke about it.
Exactly. So yeah. I don't know.
I have a logistical question.
Okay.
At the end, they decide to split ownership of the largest company in the world between their clan.
Yeah.
One of whom is an 11-year-old boy.
Right. Sure. Right.
And an 11-year-old boy legally own one-fifth of the world's largest
corporation. Literally screaming, like, somebody needs to find that kid's parents because
he'll be in a trust or something. You know, he's in charge of the Minecraft planet for a while, and then it'll get better later on. It's the one of the big problematic elements of the book is that it's so proud of itself for this big, like, actually, this character that you thought was a white guy is a black lady. Whoa.
Mind blown.
And it's like,
oh yeah,
points
I
for
remember
trying.
People were like sharing the actual script, and it was very awkward. It was like the main character being like, I don't know if I can change my pronouns. But like, part of that is that it was written like things. People have become so much more cognizant of that in the last 10 years. So I will try to not be mad about that. I'll try.
It was pretty. That was a pretty funny bit with that character's avatar in The Shining, where he meets the naked dead lady.
I'm just
gonna go with this. Oh, I love that sequence so much. I love that so much that when I watch it, I get angry that it's not reality yet. You're like, what do you mean? I can't yet put on a headset and walk around the Overlook Hotel and just watch the movie like as a fly on the wall. Like,
I don't want to do that. That,
but it's got to be close,
I think,
right?
I feel like it should be. Like, that would be pretty fun. I mean, terrifying, but I would try it at least once.
I want that to be available to people like you. I don't want to be.
I'm very
concerned about our draw coming up later.
So when this is reality and you can download familiar movies onto your VR helmet. Right.
I am going to Empire Records.
Ooh,
and I am
going
to look through their stash. That's what I'm doing.
Say okay. Monet Moore.
I think I would go to The Shining first. I mean, it's my favorite. No, I would go to Jurassic Park first.
Interesting.
Oh my gosh.
I don't even know where.
I mean, and I have so many questions about, like, do I have to follow the movie or can I wander around? Oh, it's going to be so great. I hope it happens in my lifetime.
Yeah. I mean, I remember as a child
imagining, like, on your deathbed. And
give me the thing. I know I'm on the way out. I want to walk around and watch Jack Nicholson kill people as my last act.
I do remember me and my sister talking as children about, like, wouldn't it be great if someday you could just, like, type in the name of the movie you wanted to watch and just start watching it?
Mm-hmm.
And here we are.
Yeah, I used to talk about how, you know, we were going to be able to watch movies that are in the theater in your room, like, or in your house, like when I was in fourth grade. I remember that conversation with someone.
Camila, you're crazy.
Lies! Suckers.
I do have one more old tweet of mine I want to read into the microphone, which is that there was a huge missed opportunity to have an artifact in the game that turns guns into walkie-talkies.
Hmm.
In reference to the re-release of E.T., where Spielberg, Lucas did up and made the FBI agents carry walkie-talkies when previously they had carried guns around children. And it looks very phony. Their wrists are at the wrong angles. It was not well executed. I actually think it's a reasonable edit. I do think it is weird for the FBI agents to be brandishing guns around the children at the end of E.T.
Exactly.
But that would have been a nice self-deprecating, funny, deep cut nerd joke.
Apparently Spielberg cut out most of the references to Spielberg things.
Oh,
really? Like he left things that he produced. That's why there's so many Back to the Future references. Mm. He looked the other way on it being the Jurassic Park T-Rex rather than a generic looking T-Rex.
Okay.
Mm. But most things that were either in the book or they tried to get by in the script, he was like, no, let's not go that far.
That's why you then let Colin Trevorrow or someone or Matt Reeves direct this and go collect your royalty check without doing any work.
Right, get your fingers out of
this. It's not like he needed to protect the material and like make a truly great film. He did not do that. Maybe he thought he was.
I guess he thought. I mean, it's a hell of a lot better than Kingdom of the Crystal Skull or War of the Worlds. It's probably the best of his contemporary Spielberg type movies, you know?
Does Minority Report count?
That's not really contemporary anymore.
It's only a couple years older than War of the Worlds.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
I would also say War of the Worlds is better than this.
War of the Worlds is terrible.
I haven't seen it since it came out.
War of the Worlds is Dakota Fanning screaming in your eyeball for 2 hours with some dumb aliens.
It's been a long time since I've seen that
I don't.
Movie.
I just remember liking it when it came out. I
did not. The one thing I do appreciate is that the level of references and Easter eggs go so deep that, like, mm-hmm. I started reading a list of them and then realized it would take me 2 hours and I stopped. and there are many that, like, you there are so, the best one that I found that I didn't notice on 4 watchings and hadn't heard until I was looking up new ones was that in the scene where they think. Where they have Sorrento thinking that he's in the real world, but really he's still in the Oasis. Mm. They all have Blade Runner replicant reflections in their eyes.
No.
Yes.
That is so cool.
I know. Wow. And there's 1,000 things like that.
That is so cool.
I love it a lot. We're running out of time. Let's stop talking about how I enjoyed this because it was made specifically for me and thus was effective. Let's rate it. I bet mine are going to be a little bit higher than everybody else's. So I'll get that out of the way. I know that having said that just now, that it's easy and like it probably gains a whole point on the Shining thing, but I'm going to give it an 80.
Oh, dear.
Let's for reacting, Robin, you go next.
57.
Okay.
All right, that's not tragic.
That's not that far away from what I just said.
Yeah, 69. I mean, I enjoyed it enough as to, I would even like, you know, randomly watch it again. I wouldn't seek out to watch it, but if it were on and there was nothing else happening, then
yeah,
I'd let it play.
This is something I would absolutely recommend to a middle-aged white man
right.
who hasn't seen it. I'm also super curious to show it to someone who, like, I have some friends who, like, grew up in maybe super religious households or whatever, or just, like, we don't even own a TV, people. I would kind of love to make one of them watch this and be like, tell me what you think this reference is.
do you
think a Buckaroo Banzai is?
Do you enjoy this scene where Artemis and Parzival literally just spit references at each other right. to try to make sure that the other one's cool? The final score is a 68 2/3, right around the middle of our pack. Below,
seems about right.
Below The Incredibles 2 and Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, those would seem to be the most
direct. I like this better than both of those, I think. Does that not reflect my actual rankings?
Robin gave Ready Player One a 57, gave Guardians a 49, and Incredibles a 58, so just about the same.
Yes.
About right. On Incredibles, let's talk about You Can't Handle the Truth, Am I the Only One Who's Seen It, Chapter 2.
I'm going next weekend. Mine is going to have to turn into, like, the new on digital.
Like, that's fine. That's absolutely fine. Since you haven't seen it and you're going to, I won't talk about it very much. Other than to say, I think every possible take on this movie is valid. Like, it's very, you know, you're going to get out of it what you want to get out of it.
Okay. Did you like it better than the first part?
No. It's not quite as good as the first part, but... Like, I look back and I gave them both sevens, you know? If we had our 100-point scale, the first one would have a, you know, 68, and the second one would have a 62. Okay. Like, it's a step back, but to me, it wasn't a big step back. That said, I've had people text me and say, what are you talking about? That was terrible. And I said, yeah, sure, if you think so, that's fine.
Oh, wow.
And there's, like, a camp that's like, this is actually a comedy and a good one. And it's like, yep, sure,
what?
That's fine. It's kind of a very odd project that they made some weird choices with, and it'll work for you or it won't.
Gotcha.
It's hard to review because it's like, if you're in the right mood and you look at it in the right way, you're going to enjoy it. And if not, that's fine too.
And I kind of feel like that's the way I was with the first part because I saw it in the theater. Hated it, and then I watched it again like a couple months ago and was like, this wasn't that bad. I enjoyed it. I don't know why I had so much hate for it from the theater, so maybe it just depends on mood.
I don't like scary movies, but I loved it.
Oh, okay. You did see it.
Yes. Don't you remember how at Abby's birthday, Drunk Robin was like, Sean Collier, I saw it, and I loved
it.
Oh,
that's right.
It. And you... The next day you were like, so when you are not drunk, do you still like the movie It? And I was like, in fact, I do.
Well, Bill Skarsgård is so damn good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I also just thought it was very visually, like, I thought they did a really nice job with the first one of, like, making it visually striking without, like, being, like, we get it.
Right.
I love how much you have to say it when you talk about this movie.
It's very frustrating. It's so frustrating that I'm moving on. Camila?
I saw Ma, finally.
Oh.
Which one is it?
That Octavia Spencer.
Oh, yeah.
Tragic film. It was not good. I didn't like it at all, and I feel like Octavia deserved better.
Thank you for justifying my decision to skip it.
Yeah. Don't worry about it. Don't bother with it.
Speaking of recently to streaming, I saw Late Night, which is now on Amazon Prime.
Is that, you hadn't seen it?
I had not seen it. The reason I did not see that was because the AMC app broke that weekend.
Oh, jeez.
And then it, like, immediately left theaters because no one saw it.
Yeah, it did very, very poorly.
It did very, very poorly. It is absolutely worth watching for free on your couch.
All right.
That's another, what's that genre I made up last week? Amusing relatable.
Amusing relatable.
There's a certain class of movies that, like...
It's not really a comedy. Right.
Right. But you can get you find humor in
but
it
you
because
smile
it's
while
like,
you're watching.
You
it.
Know what? I've been there.
And they're usually female targeted for whatever reason. But like I Feel Pretty with Amy Schumer, Late Night. What was I even talking about? Britney Runs a Marathon.
Right.
Like this is like you're only going to laugh out loud a couple of times, but you're going to be pleased.
That's the one with Mindy Kaling, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay. And Emma Thompson. Right. I will say I Feel Pretty had one of my favorite performances of 2018 in Michelle Williams.
Oh, yeah, she was great.
She deserved an Oscar nomination for that.
I liked I Feel Pretty. I like all of these movies.
Yeah.
The problem, in as far as there is a problem, and I think it's affecting the box office because everything we just named didn't do well,
right,
is they're marketed like it's Good Boys. You know, they're marketed like it's Blockers. Like, you're going to get a raunchy, laugh-out-loud comedy with this funny lady, and then people go and just kind of watch a story happen.
It's also annoying when their main character is a woman, and the marketing campaign, all of the posters and everything is all pink and yellow.
You are
and
so
white.
Right.
And light purple. Yeah. So that's also very annoying to me. And I tend to just kind of stay away from them because I think it's going to be something else just because of like the color palette they choose to use.
I Feel Pretty is that.
Yeah.
It 100% is that. But if you haven't seen that movie, you should watch it just for Michelle Williams.
Gotcha.
And it's pretty good. I liked it. I liked it beginning to end.
Yeah.
And Britney Runs a Marathon is good. That's probably playing near you now, unless it also flew out of theaters. But Jillian Bell is a fantastic, really anonymous, not anonymous, people like comedy people know who she is. A lot of people just might recognize her as that one woman from that one thing. But she's an excellent performer and does a great job. And the movie got much more interesting than I expected it to.
Cool.
I expected it to be a movie that she had problems, she learned to run, and then her problems went away. And it had a third act where the running didn't make her problems go away.
What?
Yeah.
Twist.
I know. So I recommend
that. That sounds weird.
Yeah. It was pretty good. I'm not going to talk about The Nightingale because, boy, is that only for hardcore movie nerds. Mm-hmm. It's the woman who directed, Jennifer Kent, who directed The Babadook.
Oh.
And her second movie is an almost impossible to watch drama about horribly abused minorities in colonial Australia.
God, no.
No, thanks.
And it's very good. But it's like Mother, like my reaction to Mother. It's like, we are contractually obligated to mention Mother once a week. It's like my reaction to that. Like, I'm pretty sure this is pretty good. Nobody should see it. Like, I'm not telling anybody
to
watch
it. Mother makes me want to watch it.
But it's not weird. It's that bleak and just disturbing and depressing without the added benefit of bizarre.
Mm, like Requiem for a Dream.
Yeah. Kind of in that vein.
I think you've convinced me to watch it, though.
All right. Have a fun time.
Sadist.
With the scene where the one gets blank and the other gets oof. Yeah, it's bad.
Yeah.
So, let's draw a movie.
But we have something special.
But not Yay! Just any movie. Camila, you did the legwork. Why
I'm
don't
so
you
excited.
Explain it?
Well, because next month is October, All Things Hallows Eve. Horror is our theme for the next two episodes because... Yeah,
we thought we should do it
because
that
it
way.
Seems right. Yeah.
It
feels
said, let's do it.
Good. So what I did is I pulled all of the horror type Halloween loving movies
spooky,
from our
scary,
list. Yeah,
right?
spooky,
They're not
scary,
all horror
or
movies.
Spooky, scary, or even just like, hey, this is a Halloween movie, Halloween comedy, like Madea's Boo, whatever Halloween. So We pulled all those.
Like A Quiet Place. Like, that's sure. Not necessarily like a horror movie, right?
No. So, no, I wouldn't say it's like flat out horror, yeah. But it's in there.
So before we draw this, Robin, are you okay?
So all along, one of the reasons I've been playing my veto very close to the chest is
You've been waiting for a horror film.
Literally, when I looked through the list, I saw a lot of horror movies go to number one because they often are released in dead zones.
Right.
And there's a subset of the audience who will see any horror movie that comes out, and then they show up opening
Guilty.
Weekend.
More than 10% of the master list is horror movies. Right. And it's kind of, we haven't really hit one.
So no. I know. So I have been waiting to play this on like a Saw. There are Saw movies.
Oh,
yeah,
there's a couple.
There are.
So, but now
the first one's not.
I'm in this conundrum, mm-hmm. right? Where if we draw that kind of horror movie, that's like the horror movie I really hate.
So yeah. it's the torture porn.
Torture porn okay. is what I really, really hate, and I veto.
I'm gonna be so upset if you veto Saw.
Is also going to be a horror movie,
right? But
so.
But you just, it's just the torture porn ones right. that you want to stay away from. But I am going to be upset if you veto a Saw.
Okay. I mean, this would be the only
that is
circumstances under which I would watching one of those. And so also, I feel like out of respect to having poorly played or not played vetoes when you would have, maybe I should, I've been thinking about leasing my veto to you. Oh. So maybe what I can do here is let Wait. You veto my veto.
No. Camila and I have vetoed. We're done until 2020.
Right.
You got one.
All right.
You
can use it.
It
or not, but it's a conundrum because we could, and you included like Witches of Eastwick is on this list.
Yeah.
So it
that
could,
would be dope.
It could land on Saw yeah. and you could veto it and it can go to Hostel or it could go to Witches of
right.
Eastwick.
Hostel, I'm totally okay with vetoing. And also
happens.
Practical Magic is on there too, I think.
Oh, that would be fun.
Now, right. if you're playing along at home, I'll peel back the curtain a little bit to say that this list is chronological. So I'm hoping for a low number.
Yes.
So we get into the 80s, the early 90s. I'm not hoping, and there's 138 here. I'm hoping for something in the teens.
Yes.
If we hit 134, nice. Then it's something from the past couple of years. The number is 93. Ooh. So it's relatively okay. recent. That is, what the hell? It says Halloween from 2007. Oh, my God. It's Rob Zombie's Halloween. I looked at it, and I thought, wait a minute. It says Halloween, but the Halloween remake was last year. What's in 2007?
Right.
And then the memory of this movie
came
back to me. I just have to look at Robin with a hopeful expression on my face.
Talk to me about what this movie actually is.
This is a direct remake of the 1977 Halloween by Rob Zombie, done like a Rob Zombie movie.
Yes, if you know anything about Rob Zombie.
I do.
Darker, grittier, gorier.
It's, yeah.
Is Jamie Lee Curtis in it?
No, nobody's in it. The only relevant person in it is, what's his name? Clockwork
doctor?
Orange. Clockwork
Orange. Oh,
Malcolm,
yeah.
Malcolm McDowell.
Malcolm McDowell yeah. takes the
okay.
Doctor part.
Here's my thinking.
Okay.
I'm actually genuinely interested in this, but I also really don't want to watch it.
I do have a coin for such
no,
a No,
I'm just.
It says risk it or
listen,
play it
now
safe.
And again, you have you have six remaining opportunities to play this veto.
Risk it or play
Let's,
it safe.
I'm gonna flip the coin. It
Robin is going
says
to
risk it or play it safe. And
Robin
so,
is going to flip the coin. If it lands on risk it, we are going to watch Rob Zombie's Halloween.
Right.
If it lands on
play it safe.
No, actually, I think risk it is the veto.
If it's
oh,
risk
okay.
it, yes. If it's risk it, we are going to veto it, and it could get
worse.
I don't know how, but
I would rather watch Rob Zombie's Halloween than watch Hostel.
Right.
Yeah.
All
right.
Yeah. Risk it. We veto.
Right.
Play it safe.
Okay.
Woo! What's it say?
Play it safe.
All right.
We're watching Rob Zombie's Halloween.
All right, cool. I genuinely love the first Halloween movie and found the remake last year worth my time.
Okay.
So.
I swore I'd never go back.
Ah, you're going back.
I mean, I have a lot to say. That cannot be denied. I have a lot to say about this movie.
We could get a new basement.
Hmm?
A new
worst movie.
Yeah.
The current worst thing on our rankings is Divergent at 22.75. I believe.
I guarantee. I didn't. I liked Halloween. Rob Zombie's Halloween more than I liked Divergent.
Robin, we're sticking with Rob Zombie's Halloween.
Yeah, I'm doing it. I gotta protect myself From the torture porn.
Okay.
And also, the coin said so.
The coin, yes. We left it up to, it's like No Country for Old Men. That's how you make your decisions. Better movies.
The number one song.
What was the number one song in America? Ready Player One was released in March of 2018.
This is one of those, like, last year was 10,000 years ago problems. Right. Like, what songs were there last year?
I will say that.
Shallow?
No, that's too early for Shallow. Yeah. I will say that this was number one for basically the whole spring.
Cardi B?
And this artist has, it looks like eyeballing it, it looks like this artist has half the year.
Oh, Drake.
Correct.
Huh.
So
I got nothing.
I don't.
I'm out.
It's
what is it like
in my feels, something like that?
Something like on my cell phone or something. I don't know. What is
that song's like 6 years old?
I don't know anything about Drake.
I got it. It's God's Plan.
God's Plan, yes. Is the song, which was from February 3rd to April 14th.
Yes.
Dethroned by another Drake song, Nice for What?
Wow.
That hung on for another 5 weeks and then came back for 2 weeks and then another week. And then he had In My Feelings for,
that's what I was thinking of,
2.5 months. Is it just me or is he not all that interesting?
I have no interest in him whatsoever.
Like, I hear it. I'm like,
I'm
this is a song.
Right. That Jimmy from Degrassi made good.
Congratulations to Drake. I'm sure he's doing
I'm sure he's a Toronto, very fine Canada. Young man, but I have no interest in getting to know him. Yeah.
We also had sound effects, and I don't know which one to play. We
for
had
Rob.
We had a good draw and a bad draw.
Oh,
sound
it was
effect.
The green button is the bad draw.
Is that?
I don't know if he really deserves all that.
Yeah, we'll find out next week.
I have some. How do you ruin that character? Next time on the number one movie in America.
Number one.